From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. U.S. relations with Turkey are currently at their lowest point in years as President Donald Trump's sanctions over the detention of an American pastor in Turkey threatens that nation's economy. Now, Turkey is diverting some of its business to Russia and is being offered a financial lifeline by Qatar. Meanwhile, a Turkish court on Friday rejected an appeal by Pastor Andrew Brunson for release. He is the evangelical Christian American who faces decades in prison on charges of espionage and terrorism. Trump tweeted on Thursday asking Brunson to, quote, represent our country as a great patriot hostage. Where does the U.S.-Turkey division stem from, and what is Trump's endgame? Joining me to help answer that question is Rahul Mahajan. He's a sociologist who's written two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He's also our U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent. Welcome back to the show, Rahul.
Great to be with you again, Sonali.
So this particular pastor, Andrew Brunson, tell us a little bit about who he is, what he faces in terms of espionage and terrorism, and why he is at the heart of this conflict.
So he's been a missionary in Turkey for like 23 years. Not very much is known about him or what he might be doing, but he got obviously caught up in a dragnet that Erdogan threw very, very wide after the failure of the coup attempt in 2016. So, I mean, tens of thousands of people got swept up. Charges of terrorism and espionage were thrown around wildly. In fact, to the point that, I mean, the response afterwards was so extreme and so indiscriminate, taking the passports of more than 100,000 Turkish citizens, dismissing tens of thousands of government employees, you name it. It was on such a vast scale that it made some people think that the coup attempt itself was actually trumped up, which is false, but the reaction had very little connection in the sense that it went far broader. There's no evidence for a lot of the people, including, as far as I know, Mr. Brunson, that of any connection to the actual plotting of what was, in fact, a genuine coup attempt.
So he basically got caught up in this and is facing a similar fate to many Turkish citizens themselves. But because he happens to be a U.S. citizen, the U.S. has attempted to win his release, right?
And in fact, the Trump administration in particular has made a really big deal about him, you know, in contradistinction to other Americans who got caught up in part because, as a pastor, you know, going to the mattress for him shores them up with the Christian right.
Wasn't there supposed to be some sort of quid pro quo with the U.S. helping to broker the release of a Turkish woman in Israel who's linked to Hamas?
So, I mean, a number of things have been tried and everything has fallen through, obviously. And the thing is that Erdogan is extremely paranoid. And when you're paranoid and there are people who are out to get you, and they're increasing numbers probably because of Erdogan's extremely erratic behavior in the last couple of years, anybody who might be connected, and at this point he suspects, he clearly suspects Americans who have been living in Turkey for a long time in particular, it's not going to be easy for him to release them, especially since, of course, there is no question whatsoever, as far as I know, of the United States extraditing Fethullah Gülen, whose members of whose organization were in fact plotting the coup plotters.
Now, the Turkish economy has been dramatically unstable, and many have accused U.S. sanctions for the destabilization. However, others have said that Erdogan is simply using U.S. sanctions as cover for his own failures with respect to Turkey's economic instability. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's always there's a very common phenomenon where structural weakness for a variety of reasons leads to a certain level of crisis, and then some overt political event jacks it up dramatically. I mean, this is what happened with the Mexican peso crisis in the 90s. The proximate cause of the crisis was the decision to first devalue the peso and then float it, but it represented something that had been building for a long time. In the case of the Turkish lira, it's lost about over half of its value since Erdogan's reinstatement after the coup. It's lost a third of its value since the beginning of the year. It's now been severely exacerbated as the political tensions have broken out into the open. And But it was all representative of the fact that the extraordinary increase in affluence in Turkey, increase in per capita GDP, et cetera, that characterized the vast majority of Erdogan's reign, involved a lot of cheap influx of a lot of money, especially euro-denominated money, easy, cheap credit, et cetera. All of that is now coming crashing down around their ears as bond rates are skyrocketing. For example, in Turkish lira-denominated bonds are going at a greater than 30% yield, and even dollar-denominated bonds at more than 15%, which is another way of saying that nobody wants to engage in credit markets in Turkey anymore. So this is the culmination of the structural weakness that was being built up over the past 10 or 15 years.
Now, Trump is characterizing his sanctions on Turkey as about more than just the American pastor, of course. He said Turkey has taken advantage of the United States for many years. This was in the same tweet where he called Brunson to be a great patriot hostage. What does he mean that Turkey has taken advantage of the U.S. for many years? Is this in line with his accusations against other NATO allies at the NATO summit earlier this year, where he basically accused Europe as a whole of taking advantage of the U.S., and he's done the same with China?
Do I have no idea what he means? He has no idea what he means. I mean, it's just, this is all just word salad. He believes that anytime anybody's engaged in any kind of transaction with the United States, they must somehow be taking advantage of them. In the case of Turkey, this is not an easy case to even figure out what he's trying to talk about. It is true that Turkey used to have a very close relationship with the United States, and that involved, among other things, the United States spending a lot of so-called defense money in Turkey, and it still, of course, has air force bases like the one in Jirlik. But that relationship has been very rocky ever since the Iraq War, for quite some time now. I don't know. I mean, I cannot tell you what it means. Apparently, buying Turkish steel involves Turkey taking advantage of the United States somehow.
What leverage does Turkey have against the U.S. financially? I mean, there are individual actions. We're reading about Turks smashing their iPhones in protest of Trump's actions. But the Turkish economy is certainly, not in a position to really threaten the U.S. economy, unless there's something I'm missing here. Does Turkey have any economic leverage on the U.S. in terms of retaliatory sanctions that would actually impact anything?
Basically, no. I mean, a lot of Turkey's industrial production goes to non-first world countries. For example, you find Turkish products all over the shelves in Iraq, especially after the occupation. It trades with Europe considerably more than with the United States, and it's not China. It doesn't produce large amounts of components that are then used in high value added U.S. products. So no, they don't have very much leverage, but they have a great deal of ability to fan nationalistic flames over this, and to have people hunker down and support Erdogan more, even as conditions get worse.
Rahul, I hope you'll indulge me. I'll ask you one more time about what Trump means. In the same tweet that he put out about Turkey taking advantage of the U.S., he said, "We will pay nothing for the release of an innocent man, but we are cutting back on Turkey." What does he mean by pay nothing for the release of an innocent man? Is Turkey asking for hostage money?
Not so far as I know. Turkey is instead asking for the normal kinds of quid pro quos on Turkish nationals in the United States. This is the sort of, unfortunately, the kind of diplomatic engagement that happens when you're talking about even people being accused of criminal acts. At this point, though, I can't imagine even that if Trump offered money for Andrew Brunson, that Turkey would oblige.
Right.
But no, as far as I know, they're not engaged in international hostage taking.
So essentially, Trump has created a situation from which he can't really back down. So what would his end game be? That Turkey and U.S. would simply cut economic ties and potentially some diplomatic ties as well? Mr. Brunson remains in prison, and that's the end of that till there's a new U.S. president that can reset relations with Turkey?
So again, I mean, you're asking me to speculate about a mind that closely resembles tapioca, both in its substance and in the products of it. So it's not more than what, 2 or 3 weeks since Trump talked about how much he liked Erdogan, then contrasting him with European heads of state, and suddenly this conflict flares up, and suddenly he's talking about Turkey like it's the devil. I think that in Trump's mind, the fact that the TL is plunging against the dollar is somehow good for the United States. We're winning. Our currency matters more. And the fact that we've got the steel tariffs now again means the U.S. is winning. So I assume that he will continue this, maybe slap on a few things, ride it for a while, then somebody with some sense, when Trump is thinking very hard about, you know, which black celebrity to call an idiot, is going to quietly start dialing back those policies some months from now.
Is there a risk of a greater political fallout from this regionally if Turkey is looking to Russia, looking to other nations, even in the Arab world, for financial help and basically to foment trade ties with? Do Trump's actions, his sort of, you know, these very knee-jerk reactions, change American interests and the alignment of American interests in on the global scale? I mean, and you know, it's not just Turkey. There are other countries as well that many here in the U.S. are worried that Trump is just throwing a big grenade into these careful alignments.
Well, so the Turkey-U.S. alignment has been in a destabilized situation where, in particular, Americans have had very little notion of what's going on for quite some time. And after the coup attempt, forget about it. The damage was done. Ever since then, there may not have been open hostility, but there was no meaningful way in which Turkey was an ally. But yes, this is going to potentially have huge repercussions. So we're seeing an economic crisis already in Turkey, with you know, rippling knock-on effects in parts of Europe. We're seeing at some point, presumably, there's going to be a massive Syrian regime offensive in Idlib, which may create hundreds of thousands of new refugees that may end up in Turkey just at a time when economic resentments are reaching a peak. There is the potential for a significant amount of violence to grow up over this, and we still don't know how much Trump's global trade war is going to continue or when he will see a squirrel and get onto something else. So this is part of that. This is an important part of that, and it's destabilizing a region that has been none too stable.
So Turkey is just one part of the sort of trade war that Trump has launched on some seeming impression that the rest of the world has slighted the U.S. and impacted its tough guy image. And meanwhile, of course, there are significant U.S. interests in the Middle East, in Turkey, in Europe, that will continue long past Trump's tenure. And I'm wondering if you think Erdogan is also going to see Turkey's fate and Turkey's position in all of this, you know, essentially Turkey having to wait for Erdogan to be replaced by a new leader before it sees some change. Or is Erdogan essentially so firmly entrenched in Turkey now with recent developments that he may be the leader for the foreseeable future?
Well, so first of all, in terms of the trade war, Turkey has now been assimilated into the trade war. It didn't necessarily have to be part of it. So the Andrew Brunson flare-up certainly has something to do with that. But now it is part of the trade war. With regard to Erdogan, yes, I think he has consolidated power to a phenomenal degree. He will continue to have elections. There will continue to be elections in which, as far as I can tell, they are counting the votes and reporting them correctly, but there is tremendous disparity in terms of amount of media coverage, quality of media coverage, access to the media for opposing candidates, etc. So there will be highly unfair, but quote, free elections. And he, it's in the absence of some tremendous upheaval, seems to have built a position that he can hold for as long as he wants. So yes, Erdogan is there to stay. His trend of sort of hyper-militant nationalist and religious populism is simply getting constantly fanned even more by these developments, although he doesn't really need any excuse. He's been going in that direction already. And, you know, at this point, there's really, it's really not clear what can be done about it. I guess the most important thing would be to get somebody in the U.S. government, perhaps in one of the so-called equal branches of the government that can put a check on Trump.
I want to thank you so much, Rahul, as always, for joining us today, helping to explain this confusing situation between the U.S. and Turkey. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
My guest is Rahul Mahajan. He's a sociologist and the author of a couple of books about the U.S. war in Iraq. He's also our U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent. And we've been discussing the U.S. and Turkey's economic fight. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.